for members only. Golf Smarter number 379, published on April 9, 2013.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Practice strategies to improve all parts of your game with Jim Waldron.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Jim.
Thank you, Fred. Great to be here again.
Yes, thank you very much. It's been just seconds since we finished our first conversation. But we're talking about the power of six, the practice strategies that you can create for yourself while you're out on the driving range or even practicing during a practice round. First one, let's go over the first four quickly, and then we'll get into number five and six.
Sure.
Number one was...
Your driver or whatever you hit off the tee on a par four or par five, hitting that tee ball longer and more accurately has
right.
a huge influence on your score.
Because, I loved what you said, the prediction of low score, the number one predictor of low score is greens and regulation and
Correct.
Combined with fairways hit. Very
important
stat.
Fairways is a big part of it, yep. Especially for average players, because you know most people, if they get in the rough, they're not going to hit the green. They don't have the club head speed.
Right.
First cut of rough, maybe, if it's a decent lie.
Number two was putts.
Number two, super short putts.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And those are the ones from 2 to 6 feet that you should be spending hours in practicing.
Yeah, and there's one other part about putt I meant to mention, I forgot, which I put under the putting category. The other part of putting that can save you strokes are long putts of around, somewhat depends on what your green speed is, but something in the neighborhood of around 35 to 45 feet or longer. You know, if you play very fast greens, it might even be 60 feet or longer, but those long putts outside that range is where people often three putt, right? So,
exactly.
So you want to spend some of your time also practicing your very long putts for distance control.
Right. Number three was the danger zone.
Yeah, 175 to 215 yards. Yeah, for sure. That's an area where people can really potentially lose some strokes if they're not practicing.
And make sure you use your alignment sticks when you are practicing that distance.
Yeah, exactly.
Number four, the mental game, or what you call art of shot making.
Art of shot making. So you're discovering what your own best focal points are, where your mind should be focused when you play golf, so you're increasing the probability of not flinching and therefore hitting a better shot. That also includes pre-shot routine, having a consistent, repetitive routine. You do the same way every time. And that gets us to five.
And let's move forward.
Five is what most people would answer when you say what's the most important thing to shooting a low score, short game. It's actually number five on the list. Still important, but it is number five. Again, I'm talking about people who can break about 105 or better, right? Because obviously there are individual exceptions to all of these rules.
You know, it's interesting because when you said danger zone, when you talk about it, my first reaction was 30 to 50 yards.
That's one of them.
To me, that's why I will not try to hit the ball as far as I can on my second shot on a par five, because I don't want to get stuck in that area.
Yeah. Well, we have, there's probably a couple hundred different varieties of short game shots, but there's four that have a vastly greater influence on your score outcome than all the other 200, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll start in no particular order. We'll start with what you mentioned, less than full distance. We call them partial wedge shots from 30 to 70 yards. Those in-betweeners, especially from about 40 to 60 yards, those drive people crazy. They just don't know how to do them, right? So.
Oh, that's so when you get tense, you squeeze, you tense up,
you
move faster, and it screws
because
up.
You don't know how to do them.
Right.
Yeah, or if you do know, if you took a lesson on, you didn't practice it enough to form some level of skill. So you need to practice your partial wedges in the 30 to 70 yard range. The second category of short game would be greenside bunker shots. Average golfers are just terrible at greenside bunker shots. So that needs some work. The third is your basic old standby, the old chip and run shot. So a low trajectory shot that lands on the putting surface usually, and then rolls like a putt to the hole. That's a very important shot. You'll probably have, you know, at least five of those around if you're a mid handicap or higher golfer, if not more. And then the fourth is a lob wedge pitch, a super high trajectory or so-called flop shot with the 60 degree wedge. You know, when you, and whenever you short side yourself, you know, with you have very little green to work with between you and you and the pin, or maybe you're going over a bunker with the pin tucked close to the bunker, or over a tree or a bush. That shot, you'll probably have at least, I would say the average golfer probably has that shot a couple times around, if not more.
Oh, I think that if you just concentrated on this one, number five, and the four elements of the short game, you will have a significant impact on your score and be a much happier golfer.
There's no question, right? So those are the four big ones in the short game.
Yeah.
The other ones, not that they're not, again, there are many other types of shots. They don't have nearly as big an impact on your score. And then number six are basically your approach shots. So that means your second shot on a par four, second and third shot on a long par five. And the idea here is you want to practice enough with all of your clubs so you feel confident with any club in your bag, in your hands. So I recommend people use 6, 7, and 8 irons in one practice session, and then practice with your 9 iron through your lob wedge. So 9 iron, pitching wedge, gap wedge, sand wedge, lob wedge in your other session. So you're basically covering all your bases with those clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that are going to help you hit the green in regulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you can probably see something different in how I'm presenting this information. I'm not talking about anything, as you noticed. I haven't mentioned any mechanical advice whatsoever. I'm assuming that you've already taken instruction on how to do all this stuff, right? And if you haven't, go take some instruction so you know what you're doing, right?
Call the Balance Point Golf Schools at balancepointgolf.com.
lots of good teachers in America today and throughout the world. Asia's got some really up-and-coming good teachers right now as well, in Europe as well. But find a good teacher in your area, take instruction, and then practice it. And the rest of the next few minutes, I'd like to kind of go over how you can apportion your time so that you have a more effective outcome.
I am so fired up to hear this. The soapbox is yours, my friend. Now that we know which the shots are, what do we do about it?
Well, let me start from the beginning. So the way the power of six works is it's geared more toward, I'd say, two types of golfers. It's geared toward, this type of practice is geared toward people who are low handicap players or even professionals, and intermediate handicap players, people who are about a 15 handicap or lower, who have already taken instruction on all of these key areas. They've taken full swing instruction. They've taken some instruction on how to hit a driver, you know, longer and straighter. They've taken some putting instruction. So in other words, they know what to do. But now the question is, how do I form a habit? How do I get better? How do I form a skill? How do I apportion my time during the week? So here's how you do it. You basically got three options if you're going to use power save. Oh, by the way, high handicappers also who've taken at least some instruction and have some semblance of skill. I'm talking about people who are in the maybe 16 to maybe 25 handicap range, right? If you're much higher than 25, you need to spend more time practicing what your instructor taught you to form dominant habits, right? Which we'll get to in a minute, but we call it overkill practice. But if you're at a reasonable level, I use the acronym RPM, reasonably proficient mechanics. If you're sort of there or close to there, right, it's not that you're making a major swing change. In other words, you've already made the major swing change, or you're close to being done with the major swing change, but you still have to put the time in to keep your skills sharp. That's what power of six is for, those people, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you have you can do two practice sessions a week at the range, and each practice session lasts 2 hours. You've got six areas here, six key categories of skill. You pick three of those. So say you pick the first three. So you spend 40 minutes on your driver practice, stop, go to the putting green. You spend 30 minutes practicing your super short putts and 10 minutes practicing your long putts, right? You go back to the range, you spend 40 minutes practicing your 175 to 215-yard range clubs. And you're done. That's 2 hours. 3 days later, you go back to the range. You practice 40 minutes on the mental game, on your pre-shot routine, your mental focus. You practice 40 minutes on one or two of those four short game skills we talked about, the flop shot, the chip shot, the partial wedges, and the bunker shot. So let's say you practice flop shots and for 20 minutes and chip shots for 20 minutes. You leave the wedges and the bunker shots for the next time you come. Right, next to the next practice session. and you practice for 40 minutes on your 6, 7, and 8 iron approach shots. When you come back next week, you'll practice your 9 iron through your lob wedge. So it's every week with two-hour sessions, you're going to practice, you'll be finished practicing all 6 key areas. And over time, probably right away, you'll see some significant score improvement. But certainly within, I'd say by the end of the second month, you're going to be significantly better at all 6 categories.
Oh, we like to hear that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other way you could do it is if you don't have two-hour sessions, you could just do 1 4-hour session if you can sustain yourself in terms of mental focus and physical energy. Some people can't. But if you have a 4-hour chunk, you could just do one practice session a week and do 40 minutes on each of the 6 segments.
And what if you only get an hour?
That's the last one. So if you have an hour, you do two. You do two 30-minute segments. You would do, say, driver for 30 minutes, and then you would do short putts for 30 minutes. The next time you go, the next week, then you would go to number 3 and number 4. So it's a great way to keep your edge, so to speak, on all 6 key scoring areas. Right?
Yep.
But it's not the only way to practice. There are a couple other ways to practice, which I'll just kind of review real quickly, which also have an influence. And this is especially geared, this first category is geared especially toward higher handicaps. And that's what we call fatal flaw practice. You go to your teacher and you say, "Teach, tell me what the number one thing I'm doing in my golf swing, right, that's causing me the most, that's costing me the most strokes." And he might say, "Well, you're moving your head too much. You're swaying off the ball in the backswing. Or you're releasing your wrist cock angle early, or you're standing up out of your spine angle." Whatever it is, whatever the most fatal, most damaging thing is, he isolates it, you see it in video, he gives you a corrective drill, and then you do what we call overkill practice. And you go to the range, and you hit as many balls as you can. I'm talking maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4 large baskets of balls.
Oh,
and an average large basket will have about 65 balls in it, 65, 70 balls. And you do shot after shot after shot with your mind focused just on doing that one corrective drill he gave you. And you might do that for a month, 6 weeks, 2 months, until you fix the flaw, until it's gone. Mm. That's very effective practice.
Or you really ingrain that flaw.
Well, you'll ingrain the flaw if you don't do anything to fix it. That's the thing. Every time you practice without addressing the flaw, it's just going to manifest more and more, right? Every time you play... The flaws tend to repeat themselves for a lot of different reasons, and you need to address it. So that's a fast way to bring your score down, is to figure out the worst thing. Make sure you tell your instructor, "I don't care about the other, you know, half a dozen sort of secondary flaws I'm doing. I don't have time to fix those. I'm working 60 hours a week, and I got two little kids and a wife. Give me something that's going to, if I really work on that one thing, and only that one thing." And by the way, for all the average golfers out there, I know how you guys think. I know how 99% of you guys are tinkerers. You're gonna do that overkill practice for one bucket, and you're going to go, "You know, I'm hitting it pretty good with this drill. Maybe I'll try something else." Talk about illogical thinking, right? I mean, I used to do, before I blew my back out 10 years ago, I would do 8 hours a day of overkill practice with only one thought in my mind, 8 hours.
Wow.
Ball after ball after ball after ball after ball.
Yeah. Wow.
Tiger does it. Ben Hogan did it. You know, BJ Singh once told Paul Azinger, when they would play practice rounds together, he'd say, "Paul, what are you working on in your swing?" And every time he asked him the question, Zinger would give him a different answer. And finally, Zinger said to VJ, "Well, VJ, what are you working on?" He goes, "Paul, I've been working on the same 3 things for the last 10 years. I'm just now starting to get good at each of them." Just 3 things over 10 years.
Wow.
That's overkill practice.
Yeah.
But that's what it takes. And, you know, the reason I'm bringing this up again, most golfers don't get this. They really, you would not believe how many people I work with. I average students, every day, this happens to me every day at my job. And I say, "Okay, here's what I want you to do. Tom, I want you to do this drill and only this drill, nothing else, for the next 6 weeks. Every time you go to the range, do some work on it at home, you know, slow motion work in the mirror. Do some practice swings in your backyard with your eyes closed. Only work on this and nothing else." And here's the response I typically get. "Oh, well, that's a great idea, Jim. I really appreciate that. Now, can I also work on my grip pressure?" I go, no, I just said, "Tom, only work on this. Don't work on anything else." "Oh, I got it. I understand. Yeah. So, but, you know, but sometimes I get bored doing it. Couldn't I work on..." No, and the answer is no, you can't.
Well, what do you do? I would say, yeah, I can't do that. I get bored, and I lose focus, and
then stop practicing, but don't practice anything else. Because the reason why is your fatal flaw is so toxic, you're wasting your time working on anything else. Anything else you work on is just dithering. It's just dithering. It's not going to produce any positive.
Well, we don't want to dither now.
So that's the whole idea. Overkill is to form a new movement pattern. You know, it's called in neurophysiology a neuromuscular pathway. You're disrupting the old pathway and you're creating a new one at the same time. And that takes a lot of repetition. So as Tiger said, a lot of reps. He says that phrase a lot. Lots of reps.
You know what's upsetting me about this lesson you're giving us?
Yeah.
It's making a lot of sense, and
I appreciate the compliment.
I know, but it's like, oh, really? Focus on one thing
if you want to go out and just bang balls for fun, I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying don't expect to get better from doing it.
Right.
Just think, well, I'm going to go hit balls as hard as I can with my driver, see how far I can hit it just for fun, but don't call it practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a form of play. That's a form of tinkering. It's not practice. Practice has to have some logic behind some purpose, right?
You must love those who tinker during their round.
It drives me crazy.
Oh, I bet, because it happens all the time. I know what I did wrong on that one. Really? You do the same bad thing every single time, and you now know? I mean, based on what?
Yeah. All right, here's another category of practice. When you do work with a teacher on a major swing change, you got to realize major swing changes take time. They don't happen overnight. You got to think not weeks, months. And if you're doing more than one major swing change, which some people will do, you're talking a year or two or 3 years to finish. Right? So, but the good news about that is if you really want to make that process, which is inherently slow, if you want to make it faster and the most effective, with very few exceptions, again, only for advanced players and only for certain parts of the swing, most of the mechanical changes on the balance point system that I developed over 25 years ago is done without a ball at home in super slow motion in front of a mirror. That's the most effective way to make major swing changes.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't do it in the range. You do it at home in front of a mirror.
Lynn Marriott called the Tai Chi swing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very effective. Another way to practice, which is one of my favorites to do, I do it a lot, particularly if I haven't been playing for a while. Like I usually take the fall off and don't start playing till I get back to Hawaii in January. I call it creative tinkering and exaggeration drills. And so this is one way Tiger was talking about a few years ago in a clinic he did. He did it a lot when he was a kid, where you just go out and you take the swing you have. You don't try to change your swing in any way. So you're not thinking mechanics. You're thinking nothing but ball flight and let your body motion react to your intended ball flight. So you take your six iron out. You see, how low can I hit the six iron out there? You try to hit a super low trajectory six iron, hit a few of those, and then try the opposites. How high can I hit the six iron, right? Then you vary the curve. Let me hit like a 40-yard slice with the six iron. Hit a few of those. Okay, what if I could hit a 40-yard hook with the six iron? So you're always going from one extreme to the other. So you do that with curvature, you do it with trajectory, you do it with path, you know, clubhead path. You try to swing exaggeratingly in to out, right? Normally that'll produce a big, well, it depends how your face angle responds, but for most people, if they're decent players, it'll produce a hook.
This is assuming that, you know, the better players who can manipulate their swing like that. Because I'm going through some swing changes right now, and you just depress me about reminding me that it takes months to make it, you know, work, or even years. But the first thing that comes to my mind is a perfect example of that would be Tiger, right? I mean, how long has he been working on major swing changes, and he's back. He's now number one again.
It's been about, I think it's been 2.5 years with Foley now.
Yeah. And
but
it took
path is a big deal. I mean, I had a student not that long ago, actually here in Hawaii, who just could not swing in to out. I mean, so we had to stop doing this drill because he just didn't have enough awareness in his body to produce the desired. You know, his body wasn't responding to the image in his head of swinging the club out to right field across the target line from in to out. He couldn't do it. I had to give him a mechanical way to do it. But for people who maybe are a little bit better athletic ability, you know, what you do is you swing in to out when you're doing it well, and the ball's starting out to the right of your targets and pretty much staying out to the right. Then you go, okay, I'm going to swing out to in. Now, most people swing out to in naturally anyhow. That's pretty much you're sort of hardwired to swing out to in. But
yeah,
what you do then is you go back and forth. You go out to in. If your club face is square to the path, you'll hit a pull, right? Then you go in to out. If the club face is square to your path, you'll hit a push. So you're deliberately hitting a big push followed by a big pull back and forth. And so then you find the middle. And you always end the exaggeration training by finding the middle. So if you're hitting a low shot followed by a high shot, then you hit a medium trajectory shot, right? And you do it with tempo. You do a 5-speed, then you do a 12-speed. 12-speed would be, you know, 20% faster than your normal tempo. Normal tempo would be number 10. So you start at a 5, which is, you know, very slow, right? Like basically half speed. Then you do a 12. Then you do a 7.5-speed. Then you do a 10-speed. So you're constantly varying the speed of your tempo, right? Mm-hmm. That's a great way to help your golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
The length of your backswing, deliberately do a half backswing length and a three-quarter backswing length and a full backswing length. You can do how you let your wrists release. There's two main ways. You can use the muscles in your wrists and forearms to throw the wrist cock angle open, which is called an active release. Or you can do the opposite, where you do nothing with your wrist and forearm muscles and just turn your body and let the turning of your body create centrifugal force, which pulls open your wrist cock angle, right? You can play around with that. You can play around with angled attack, the angle the club head approaches the ground on a very steep angle versus a very shallow angle. And it means sweep the ball off the grass, no divot, versus a deep divot in front of the ball, right? Two different ways of doing it. And what happens, if you did like a two-hour session with this kind of exaggerated sort of creative tinkering, where you're playing around with this, again, nothing real super technical, just feeling the sensations in your body when your body responds to how you're trying to make the ball behave differently. Most people hit it really, really well. And they realize, hey, I can make it go low. I can make it go high. I can hit a push when I want to. I can hit a pull when I want to. I can slice it when I want to. I can hook it when I want to. And after 2 hours, guess what? You walk off the range, you're super confident in your ball striking ability. It's a great way to get confidence. And awareness. Your body awareness is now much more, it's more wider. It's bigger. It's more panoramic. You can feel what your body and club are doing, whereas, you know, when you're playing badly, you don't feel anything. It's like you just all you know, you're hitting the ball crappy. You don't know why, right? So so this is a great way to build up your confidence. Another practice category I call BRTT. That stands for balance, rhythm, tempo, and timing. So you go to the range for a couple hours, and you maybe do 30 minutes on balance drills, 30 minutes on rhythm drills, 30 minutes on tempo drills, and then 30 minutes on timing, which is the sequencing of your body parts on the forward swing. And the big one there is timing. There's several, but the really big one for average golfers is timing your wrist cock release point with your pivot. Right? If your wrist cock release is typically, for most average golfers, it's going to be too early relative to their pivot.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll hit a number of bad shots, particularly fat shots with their irons. So getting the timing of the wrist cock release down is a big one for average golfers.
So hard to do.
Yeah,
I mean, that's where I'm struggling big time. Not just the in to out, but the wrist cock thing is really baffling me. And so what I end up doing is casting, and I lose all that power by releasing way too early.
Well, you got to get one of Martin Chuck's tour strikers. There's a plug for Martin.
I have one. And my teacher's like, yeah, you're coming, but my hands are too far in front. And it's like, oh, boy.
Well, yeah, you can be too far in front. That's fairly rare. It tends to be a better player's flaw. But I met a European Tour player on the range here at Turtle Bay a few days ago. We've been hanging out the last few days, Marcus. And I showed him that we were at the Turtle Bay Palmer course, the private range, yesterday for 3 hours practicing together. And I showed him the tour striker. He loved it.
Oh, they're awesome.
He thought it was the best training he'd ever used. He was raving about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But here's a tip for you.
They are available at golfsmarter.com, by the way, if you don't have
them
yet. Oh, yeah, yeah, we sell them. Yeah, Martin's awesome.
The quickest way to fix, there's other ways for sure, including other training aids besides tour striker, but the quickest way to fix an early release where you're throwing or casting or throwing the wrist cock angle away is to work on your grip pressure, because I guarantee you that Right before you fire the muscles in your wrists and forearms to throw the wrist cock angle away, you're going to tighten your grip pressure. Your finger pressure is going to tighten, and then you throw. So if you can learn to keep your grip pressure light and constant during the beginning of the downswing, the so-called transition segment, it's physically impossible to throw it away.
Interesting.
The only way
you
can throw
great.
It away is to tighten first. So as long as you don't tighten your fingers, you're not going to throw it away, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I like that. Ooh, I like
anyhow,
that.
Anyhow, that's a little bit about practice. I think if people apply what they're hearing here, they're gonna. It's very logical. It makes sense, and it works. It's worked for the students I've used it with the last about 18 months.
And is it a mistake to mix and match? Or, I mean, because you had the way you were doing it, you to work on number one, two, and three, then work on three, on four, five, and six.
Yeah, right? Again, the power of six thing is for people who are already have taken quality instruction. They've got at least a moderate degree of improvement by doing more of the overkill or the slow motion mirror work practice, or those other forms of practice we talked about. So they sort of got a handle on it, but they still know that there's these six categories that have more influence than all the other shots do, and they want to practice those on a regular basis, so they continue to see the scores come down. That's what the power of six is for. If you're a mid to high handicap golfer that you know has particularly golf swing issues, you need to take instruction on how to learn the fundamentals, and that's a lot. Again, most of that stuff is done at home in the mirror, right? Whether it's your grip position or your setup or your let's say your takeaway segment or your second half of backswing segment, do all that away from a golf ball in slow motion, right? If you know you have balance, rhythm, and tempo or timing issues, if your mechanics are pretty good, right, but your balance is way off or your rhythm is terrible or your tempo is too fast or too slow for your own good or your forward sequencing, the timing of your release is too late or too early, then do that type of practice, right? But the point is to get an overall sense of where your game is at. What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And then come up with a plan, one of these several plans I outlined here, and then work the plan until you reach your goal.
Mm-hmm.
People go, well, how long does it take? I go, it takes as long as it takes. Everybody's different.
Right.
Just keep doing it until you achieve your goal, until you start to see the ball behave properly, you hit the ball further, straighter, make more putts. You'll start seeing your scores come down. And then you can work on something else.
Well, I find it interesting that so much of what you were of this power of six is ball striking practice. But I'm on number four, the mental game, the art of shot making. Help me on that, on how I can improve on that while I'm on the range as opposed to being on the course, because it's a very different thing for your mental game on the range than it is on the course itself.
Well, another form, I wasn't sure we'd have time for, there are a couple others. One is called playing the course, and this is what Hogan would do in the range.
Right.
Hogan would actually pick the club he would hit on the first tee, typically a driver, and then, assuming he hit the driver the way he wanted to hit it, his next shot, let's say, would be a 6-iron. Then he would pull a 6-iron, hit one ball to 6-iron. Then of course, there's no putting because you're on the range. So you'd go to the next thing. Let's say the second hole's a 150-yard par 3. So he would take an 8-iron, hit one 8-iron shot, right? Again, go to the next tee. So you're playing the long game from the range.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever course you're going to be playing either that week or that day. And make it more like what you'll be doing. So you're basically rehearsing what you can do in the golf course on the driving range.
That's yeah, that's been suggested by many instructors who've been on the show. And I remember—I don't remember who said it, but I loved it. Was when you're doing a warm up before your round, go ahead and play the first three holes.
Yeah.
But in your mind on the range, you know, if you know the course, get those first three holes in so that when you get out and play the course, you've already done the first three holes in your mind, so you can, you know, you've practiced that and you get yourself up to speed there.
Well, let me give you a more concrete answer than that even. It basically comes down to stuff we've talked about in at least four of the other episodes I've done, which is the idea that you have focal points, or through experimentation, mostly on the range, you find that when I see X or feel Y or hear Z, right, you get those three primary sensory channels, for most people, especially average golfers, they're better off ignoring the visual and the auditory, and they're going to probably find better results. There are some exceptions. I mean, target picture being one, which is visual. But except for that, if they're going to focus on anything to do with what their body's doing, they need to use feel channels. So for example, I play a lot of my best golf when my mind is in my hands in feel channel, feeling the pressure that I'm holding the handle with. And so I keep my mind there, right?
Mm-hmm.
from right before I trigger my takeaway until the finish. I never let my mind go anywhere else. And if I actually do that, I almost always hit a really good shot. So what you're doing is you're rehearsing what you're going to do on the golf course. You're rehearsing it on the range, how you're going to use your conscious mind focal points.
You know,
that's a great way to practice.
Oh yeah. Every time you pay us a visit, I just walk away, and it's not so much my head is spinning, but I fall in love with the game that much more every time I talk to you.
Well, thanks, Fred. That's a really nice compliment. I appreciate it.
Because it's like you give me such concrete stuff that I understand, and I'm not a single-digit player. I'm not one of the better players, and I'm worse now than I was a while ago. But, you know, everything changes, you know, because I'm going through. But I just feel like, okay, I have a plan of action. I know what I want to do now, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
And
you
know, I hope someday I can take lessons from you. I would really love to do something with you.
Well, you know, come over to Hawaii like we talked about.
Okay.
We'll do a school here.
Yeah, well, maybe we should do a Golf Smarter school in Hawaii.
I think we've talked about that.
Nobody responds to me. I want
come
to
on,
do
respond,
it. Come
people.
On, folks.
Get to fly to Hawaii. What a horrible thing, fly to Hawaii in the middle of winter, right, from the mainland.
Nobody wants to do that. Right.
But, you know, back to what you said. I mean, that to me, I guess if I had to pick the one advantage I've had as a golfer, it's just the way I am, my personality. Everything I do is clear. If I'm not clear, I don't take any action. Hmm. I mean, I don't even get up out of the chair and leave the room if I'm not clear about my intention, you know. That's the power of clarity and having a clear intention. So you need to have that to play golf well. Not too many golfers do. Most golfers, if they were being honest about their game, they would say it's a confused mishmash, a big mess of a tip here and an article I read there and something I saw on a web forum here. And they don't really know what they're supposed to do with their mind, with their body, with their club. They don't. They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my mission in life is to help people become clearer about what their intention should be and how they can go about achieving it. And you have to approach a golf shot with a very simple, clear view of what you're trying to accomplish, whether it's on the range in terms of a practice drill, even if it's without a ball, like slow motion mirror work or, you know, practice swings with your eyes closed, whatever it is, you have to know why you're doing it, what the purpose is, sort of the meta purpose, the overarching purpose, you know, and how it's going to help you both in the long term and hopefully in the short term. Right, you got to believe it's true. Here's the other thing: we did talk about a lot of the practice rules, but I always tell my students, "Well, why do you go to the range?" Here's what people typically say to me: "To see if I can hit it good." I go, "No, that's not why you go to the range." No, why should I go? You're going to hit it good. You're going to the range to hit it good, not to see if you could hit it good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but sometimes I don't hit it good. I go, well, that's partly because that's golf, because it's a hard game, right?
Right.
But you have to decide before you leave the house what you're going to work on with your mental focal point, where you're going to put your mind, and what you're trying to do with your body and your club. And you're not going to change it just because you happen to hit, say, 5 bad shots in a row. You don't give up on it. But think of it this way. There's no sport in the world where they condition the advice about the mechanics of the motion, the athletic motion, on the part of the coach, right? The coach doesn't condition his advice on whether or not the student gets instant success. Like if you're teaching someone how to shoot free throws, right, there's certain rules for that, right? I'll give you one example because I used to play a lot of basketball. You know, you're going to roll. There's a release of the wrist in basketball, in a shot in basketball, just as in golf, right? And so your wrist kind of arches forward, kind of uncocks forward, and the ball rolls off the two middle fingers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I'm coaching you, and you try that, and you're on your own the next day after taking a lesson on this with me. And the first 8 shots you hit badly miss, and you're trying to roll the ball off your two middle fingers, right? So then you start doing something else. Well, I think I'll let it roll off my index finger or maybe my baby finger. Ah, that rolling doesn't work. I missed 3 more. I don't think that's a fundamental. That's how golfers practice. Now, if I was your basketball coach and I came back the next day and I'd say, how's the finger roll exercise going? And you said to me, you know, I tried it and I missed 8 balls in a row. You know what? If I was like Bobby Knight, besides throwing chairs, which Bobby Knight would probably do, not John Wooden, thank God. No, I'd be pissed. I'd say, what do you mean? The greatest players in history for the last, 100 and something years, all the top NBA players, they all roll the balls off the two middle fingers. You're telling me you don't think it's a rule? You don't think it's a law of basketball mechanics? Of course it is. The fact that you missed eight is meaningless. You keep doing it until you start making them. Right. That's how you should practice when you play golf. You go to the range knowing what you're going to do. You don't go to the range to try to figure out what to do. That's the job of the teacher. Your teacher that you paid all that money to, that guy's got the information that you're supposed to internalize and to practice. That's how you get better, through practice. Right? That's just cause and effect. It's logical. Right?
Perfect. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Total sense. So I'm just curious, from one old hippie to another, when you talked a moment ago about you don't get out of your chair unless you have an intention.
Yeah.
Are you telling me that you've never walked across the house, got into your bedroom and go, what did I try to get?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
I'm 61 now.
I just want to make sure that it wasn't just me.
I've got to take my Alzheimer's medication. I forgot today. And I forgot because I have a bad memory. So that's a kind of a logical excuse, right? But, no, but yeah, sure, I do that, of course, yeah. But in general, no, I try to be
intentional. You try to have intention.
I try to be in the moment. I try not to think about the future or the past. I really don't spend hardly any time at all thinking about the past. I stay in the moment. It's something I started doing 40 years ago as a practice, a spiritual practice. And I try to be aware of why I'm doing something. Yes. And I have to have a good reason to do it, otherwise I don't do it. You're better off just doing nothing.
Wow.
You know?
Listen, we've not even talked about yips or putting at all. But I loved this conversation about the practice strategies. So that just means you're going to have to come back for more, right? Because we've got a list of topics we wanted to cover that I know that you and I can easily spend a half hour to an hour on every time.
The yip stuff is fascinating. I've been doing a lot of work for the last, 15 years with people with severe cases of the yips, and it's been really, really successful.
All right. Well, so let's schedule something so we can bring you back more often.
Yeah, sure, cool.
Awesome. All right, well, Jim Waldron again. It's thebalancepointgolf.com. Take lessons or do one of his schools. Let's all go to Hawaii in the winter and go play, not play golf, learn golf from Jim Waldron of Balance Point.
Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Jim. It's great talking to you again. Have a phenomenal time in Hawaii, and hopefully we'll get together in Oregon sometime soon.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, you bet.
I want to say thank you very much to our newest Golf Smarter members, Eric Gunn of Norfolk, Virginia, and Jim Tolan of Dublin, Ireland. These two Golf Smarter members are each going to receive a free 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain by Onnit Labs. And I know there are people who will not buy the idea of this kind of stuff, of supplements like this, and there are people who will totally buy into it, and that is okay. Right now, I know it's working for me. Is it a placebo? It could be. I don't think so. But I know that my mental game has improved to the point, the noise in my head has quieted, that my four rounds down in Scottsdale and Phoenix this past week, I was not hitting the ball well, but I didn't lose my cool. I didn't lose my focus, and I was able to avoid triple bogeys, which is a big deal for me. I mean, I'll accept a double bogey the way I'm hitting the ball right now, but triple bogeys I don't love, but I wasn't having them. And I really think that Alpha Brain, I've gotten the rhythm of how I like to use it, and so I continue to use it. And I encourage you to give it a try, too. If you're having issues with focus or your mental game not working, Alpha Brain's going to work for you. So anyway. Thanks again to those two new Golf Smarter members, and thank you to Onnit Labs for providing these free bottles for our new members each week. So, yeah, I had a great time down in Phoenix and Scottsdale, and because of it, we're going to have three upcoming episodes of Golf Smarter that I was able to record, and I also got two really good greenside video tips for Golf Smarter TV, our YouTube channel, and I hope you have checked that out. There's a lot of video on Golf Smarter TV. Just go to YouTube and type in Golf Smarter TV, or just go to golfsmarter.com and click on the YouTube button there. We have a full page. You can select which one you'd like to view, and I'd love to get your feedback on that. As a matter of fact, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.